Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. I'm Dana Zook. We are focusing on seasonal topics here on the podcast. A few weeks ago, we discussed deworming management with Dr. John Gillum at the vet school. And this week, we are talking about a couple other pesky parasites external in nature. So we're going to do horn flies and we're going to do ticks in a kind of a series of podcasts here. So stay tuned. So this first episode, we're going to talk about ticks. So here to discuss these pesky parasites is Dr. Jonathan Kamek. He's our new livestock entomologist at Oklahoma State University. Dr. Kamek, welcome.
Thanks, Dana.
Newer listeners to the podcast may not know that I love to hear about people's stories and how they came to Oklahoma State. So, Dr. Kamek, you're on the hot seat now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what brought you to the great state of Oklahoma? Because you are very new to the state.
Yeah, very new. A little more seasoned now that we're here at the end of April. But I started my position at the end of January, technically, as the new livestock entomologist and parasitologist within the Department of Entomology and Plant Pathology at OSU, and also have an appointment with Extension in that same role for parasitology and livestock entomology. My background has been all in entomology and kind of things that are rotting and kind of smell bad and have insects associated with them. And I've got entomology degrees from Texas A&M, Clemson, and North Carolina State University. And NC State is where I really kind of got thrown into livestock entomology because that's what my PhD advisor did. And so we did a lot of projects with pest management in all sorts of livestock systems, broiler chickens, turkey poults, dairy cattle, swine production. It was a really good experience for that. And then when that was done, I returned to Texas A&M as a postdoc for about 5 years, working in kind of this larger area of decomposition ecology. So again, if it smells bad and bacteria and flies are eating it, I was kind of working in that system for a number of different reasons. Spent a few years running an insect agriculture-based company where we were using an insect, the black soldier fly, which is also important in a lot of these livestock systems. We were using it to recycle organic waste streams and then turn their insect protein biomass into treats for backyard chickens. And then I worked in pesticide safety education for most of last year before taking on this position that I have now. And it was just really a great opportunity. This position came open last summer, and it was too good of an opportunity to turn down and apply for. And here I am.
We are very glad to have you here. We've done a lot of meetings with Dr. Kamek over the last couple months. We've really made him jump headfirst into the extension pool. I think you've said that you've done pigs, cattle, goats, all the things in the last couple months.
Yeah, chickens too. Yep.
Let's jump right in and talk about ticks. Dr. Kamek, to what extent are ticks a problem in cattle? And tell us a little bit why. I mean, maybe we can't see them, but they are really a big problem.
Yes, certainly. So there are some species that are more problematic than others. You can't just say that all of them are a problem because we've got kind of different behaviors and some of these species do different things. And as you indicated, they can be kind of small. They can be hard to see. Certain species will only attack the animals on certain parts of their bodies. Like Gulf Coast ticks, we typically find in the ears of cattle, whereas some of the other species, American dog tick and Lone Star tick, we might find essentially all over the body and can be difficult to see because they're basically parasites that have evolved to have a very close association with their host, and they're always when they're feeding, they're attached to their host, so they want to make sure that they're protecting themselves from either being removed from that host or by some other predator in the environment, like a bird or something. So they're very good at hiding, which can make it difficult to notice them and then therefore be able to treat for them.
We recently, Dr. Kamek and I, presented at a meeting in Pond Creek in our Grant County for Grant County producers, and there was a producer there that said that he had a significant amount of ticks in the ears, and so that was very apparent to him.
Yes.
And so that's one way. I mean, one place where you can really see them, but then otherwise you don't really notice them as much. tell us a little bit about the general life cycle of a tick. Maybe not every specific species, because we'll get into that, but generally, what's the life cycle of a tick?
Okay. Ticks can basically be broken down into two categories, based on kind of their body design, and that's soft ticks versus hard ticks. Most of the ticks that we're dealing with in cattle production are hard ticks, and we can further break them down into how many different species or number of host animals they feed on throughout their life, and that's either going to be one, two, or three host ticks. It's relatively easy to remember. And then most of the species that we have of concern, particularly within livestock, are going to be three host ticks. So I'll focus on kind of the general biology of that. They're going to have four developmental stages. We have that adult tick that's going to be taking the blood meal and producing eggs. That adult female tick is going to lay those eggs, and those eggs will then hatch into very, very small, what we call larvae. These have six legs. They're sometimes called seed ticks. So if you've ever been unfortunate enough to encounter those, you know what kind of a problem those can be. They're going to take a blood meal on a host, usually a smaller host, because they are a pretty small pests at this point in their life. They're typically going to feed on something small, like a bird or a rodent. They're going to get a blood meal, drop off that host, molt into an eight-legged nymph that is then going to seek a new host that's going to be a little bit bigger. So maybe think squirrel, raccoon, dog, something like that. That tick's going to take its blood meal, drop off the host, molt, and then we have an adult that is going to start looking for that larger host. Typically something in the dog, deer, horse, cattle, human, size range of host. And this entire process is going to take typically about 2 years. They're usually going to lay their eggs in the spring, and then they're going to develop very slowly over that time frame. So that's one of the things that can make them challenging to control, is they can live for quite a long time.
That's surprising. I didn't know that. 2 years.
Yeah, 2 years for that development cycle. And we can even have adult female ticks that can live for 2, 3, 4 years without even getting a blood meal. So it's pretty crazy how resilient they are and how long they can survive in the environment.
Wow. So since this is a podcast and not kind of a presentation with pictures, because listeners, you are kind of missing out on the picture part, but let's talk about some of the specific ticks. Give a little bit of descriptions and a summary of some of the most common species that affect cattle here in Oklahoma.
Okay.
So why don't you start with the Gulf Coast tick?
Okay. Yeah, so that one I think could potentially be confused with one of the other species that we're probably going to talk about here in a bit,
Okay.
just in terms of their coloration. So these are typically going to be a little bit more ornate, is what we would call them. Their bodies are usually kind of a dark brownish, kind of a dark kind of maroonish color, and then they're going to have some sort of patterning across their back, and the patterning is specific to being able to identify a given species. But for the purposes of a podcast, right, since we can't show pictures along with that, it's not going to do
Right.
much other than say they've got some pretty spots and stripes and stuff that kind of cover their back. But typically with Gulf Coast, we can identify them usually by where they're going to be found on the animal. That's the pest that's typically going to be found in the ears of the cattle that cause that condition known as gotch ear. And that's just a response by the cattle's ear of having a large number of ticks feeding in this small area, and we start to see some swelling, some inflammation, some irritation of the animal's ears, and then we could also see some blood loss because of the large amount of ticks that are feeding in that area. And usually we're going to see these kind of about early April to mid-June here in Oklahoma. So this is going to be kind of a spring to early summer tick, which is one of the ways that we can also identify it based on that seasonality.
And so you did mention at the presentation that feral hogs are a big transporter, that's probably not the right word, Dr. Kamek, of these ticks. Is that
Yeah,
right?
so there's some research that's coming out of South Texas where feral swine are a big problem, and it's showing that they're playing a significant role in moving these ticks into the pasture environment. So we think about that, the different hosts that these ticks are feeding on, the Feral Hog might be, one of these kind of smaller hosts that, one of the nymphal stages or maybe the adults might be feeding on, and they're getting moved around the environment by that pest animal. So we'd also want to take into consideration if you do have a feral hog problem, controlling them as well, because it can contribute to controlling the tick populations in the herd.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to ask. So they can be like an early stage host for the tick, or they could be like the adult state, the host for an adult. It could be any of those. So
It
that,
could be, yeah.
but cattle are typically the host they have in the adult stage. Is that
Correct. Yeah,
correct?
that kind
Okay.
of that third host in that three host life cycle is typically where we're going to see the Gulf Coast tick. Usually the nymphs and the larvae are going to feed on something small, like ground nesting birds, so things like quail and small rodents.
All right, so tell us a little bit about another one of your ticks,
Okay,
your tick.
the next one we can go to would be the American dog tick. That is another one of these kind of more ornate species that's got a lot of coloration on its back. Into the kind of untrained eye, they're going to look very similar to the Gulf Coast tick, and their coloration can range quite a bit. They can have white spots on their back or stripes. They could have gray spots and stripes, or they could even be very silvery in color. So they can be again very ornate and quite beautiful. If you just look at them for what they are, but not for the kind of the pest status of things and all the other dirty things and diseases and stuff that come along with them.
Beautiful is in the eye of the beholder. Okay. So,
And like Gulf Coasts, the American dog tick are they're three host ticks. They're typically going to be feeding on small rodents in that larval and nymphal stage. And then, as their name suggests, the adults are common pests of dogs and other small animals. And so we do see these on cattle as well, but they're going to be in other parts of the body. So basically everywhere but the ears. So we would think about looking at the base of the tail, between the legs, along the neck, along the brisket, along the jawline, a lot of places on the body. And that's one of the reasons that, they can be problematic and hard to spot, is because they can be just about everywhere. So unless you're doing a good thorough check of the animal all over its body, you might miss them.
And they transmit anaplasmosis, is that correct?
They do, yeah. They are the primary vector of Anaplasma marginalis in cattle, particularly the males, because they're going to feed on multiple host animals or multiple cows within your herd. So, from a biological standpoint, the females need to get basically one really big blood meal. That way, they can have the protein necessary to produce their eggs. So, they're going to spend a considerable amount of time on a host getting that blood meal, and then they're going to drop off so they can find a place in the environment to lay their eggs. Now, the males don't have to invest all that energy in producing those eggs. So they're going to get on an animal, take a blood meal. If they blood feed from an infected animal, they're going to get that microorganism in their body. So they're going to take it up, and then they are actually a biological vector of that pathogen. So that Anaplasma marginalis pathogen is going to replicate in the salivary glands of that tick, so that when the tick feeds on the next cow in that herd, it's going to basically transmit that pathogen to that animal.
I think a lot of people misunderstand how anaplasmosis is transmitted. I mean, I think humans do a little bit of that with needles and stuff like that, but I think a lot of people think it's flies, but and it is horse fly, deer
Yeah,
fly,
horse
those are
flies,
flies.
and deer flies, which are starting to become a problem. I noticed yesterday when I pulled into my driveway, I was like, "Oh, what are all these cool little things flying around the truck?" And then as I stopped, a couple of deer flies landed on the mirrors, and I was like, "Oh no."
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're mechanical vectors. They're not biological vectors like the ticks
Okay.
are. So their mouth
Okay.
parts just get dirty and infected with the Anaplasma, kind of like needles and other instruments would, for whatever vaccines we might be giving them. It's essentially the same. The mouth parts of a deer fly or horse fly serve in that same capacity.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. All right. So what about the Lone Star tick? Tell us a little
Lone
bit
Star
about that.
tick. Yeah, that's probably the one that everybody would be most familiar with. It's definitely one of the easiest ones to identify. The females are again have that kind of brownish coloration, but they've got a bright white spot right in the middle of their back. The males don't have that same characteristic coloration, so they're a little bit difficult to identify. But the females have, they're very easy to identify, and this is going to be one of the most commonly encountered ticks within the state of Oklahoma. They're an important pest of basically everything, all livestock, all wildlife, our pets, and also us. So essentially, nobody is going to be safe from them. The Lone Stars are typically what we see when somebody has been unfortunate enough to have gotten into a batch of seed ticks, because that female is going to lay such a large cluster of eggs in an area that they're all going to hatch about the same time. And those tiny larvae are going to crawl up to the top of a blade of grass or something and stand there and wait for a host to walk by. And if you just happen to be unlucky enough to be that host that walks by, they're all going to latch onto you. And then you're going to have a lot of new friends hanging out, trying to take a blood meal from you.
So I guess what's unique about the tick is, and you may have mentioned this, Dr. Kamik, I was distracted by ticks crawling all over me. The females actually, do they produce more eggs than the normal tick, or at one time, or is it, okay, you're giving me the look like maybe not.
Maybe not. I mean, they do
Okay.
produce a lot of eggs, in the numbers of, hundreds to thousands, but most of the ticks are going to kind of fall within that range. I think that with the Lone Stars, they're just, so problematic is because there are so many of them already present,
Okay.
in most of the state that it's going to, we're more likely to encounter them because they are so abundant.
Okay, so what about the Lone Star tick, Dr. Kamik? Tell us a little bit about that and how it impacts cattle.
Sure. So this is, probably the most commonly encountered tick species that we have in the state of Oklahoma. They're an important pest of basically everything: livestock, pets, people, wildlife. Essentially, nobody is safe. And if you've ever been unfortunate enough to have gotten into a batch of seed ticks, this is the species that was likely responsible for that, because the females are going to lay a large batch of eggs, somewhere in the environment. Those eggs are going to hatch. The larvae are going to crawl up to the top of blades of grass or something like that. And if you're unfortunate enough to walk by, they're going to latch onto you, and then you're going to have seed ticks present. But in terms of cattle production, they can be found just about anywhere on the body. So kind of like the American dog tick that we talked about previously. So we want to check, the neck, the jawline, brisket, between the legs, and even a pretty low number of these ticks can have a pretty significant impact on weight gain and performance within cattle. So as few as about 10 female Lone Star ticks blood feeding on an animal can impact weight gain and performance. So it's, very low number. So something that we've got to be very cognizant of to, check the animals and make sure that we're identifying these pests and removing them or treating them if necessary.
So it sounds like the Lone Star tick is maybe a little bit more impactful from a weight gain standpoint on cattle if we have a
Yes.
certain number of ticks on that animal. So what can producers expect as far as its range across the state of Oklahoma? Does it reach into our western areas?
Typically what we're seeing with ticks is, they need a pretty humid area to be able to live, right? So that's one of the things that's helped driving their expansion westward is the expansion of eastern red cedar as it is moving across the state. It's creating these areas that have a lot higher humidity that the ticks are then able to survive in that they wouldn't normally be able to survive. So within the state of Oklahoma, we're seeing Lone Stars pretty much across most of the state, with the exception of the Panhandle and maybe a little bit of that kind of far western part of the state, whereas with some of the other species, they're a little bit more restricted to the eastern part. But the Lone Star tick distribution is unfortunately expanding both westward and northward throughout the country.
Okay, unfortunate, I guess. All right, so what about this new problem tick we are hearing about? Tell
Yeah,
us a little
so
bit about that.
the Haemaphysalis longicornis, that is the Asian longhorn tick, that is a new species that we kind of need to have on our radar. So they were first found in New Jersey in about 2017, but we now know through some kind of older samples of ticks that have been gone through, a little more recently than that initial publication, that they were likely present on the East Coast as early as 2010, and they are spreading relatively rapidly across the United States from east to west. And the central portion of Oklahoma is at about kind of the westernmost portion of their predicted range based on environmental variables, again, that need for humidity and moisture in the environment. We currently do not have the species documented in the state of Oklahoma. It's present in Arkansas and Missouri, so very close. But again, they probably don't know state borders and county lines and things like that. So the probability that they could already be present in that kind of northeastern corner of the state is quite high. We just haven't found them yet.
So, I mean, it's in the been identified in the county right next to Oklahoma in the Arkansas
Yes.
County.
Yeah,
Yeah, they don't.
those two counties right in the very top northwestern corner of Arkansas.
So, how do you think this tick spread to the US? Was it from trade? I mean, that's got to be how it is.
Yeah, right. That's really the only reason that something is going to show up, basically across the ocean.
I mean, they're not
And
going to want to bring it here. It's not like I'm going to
no.
bring this unique tick back as a
Yeah.
pet. No, we're
Yeah,
not going to do
and
that.
it didn't swim here,
Yeah.
or anything like that. It wouldn't have gotten on a, gotten on a the piece of driftwood or something and floated all the way. So, it had to have been some sort of human-mediated transport, likely in it, accidental and inadvertently. But that's how most of the pests that get transported around the world occur, right? You typically by
Right.
accident where they have contaminated some goods and it ends up in its new location. And if it's caught early enough, it doesn't become a problem. Or if it's not caught, in the case of a lot of pests like this, we don't know about it until a few years later, and by that point they're already established.
What is unique about this tick, and why are we so concerned about it in the cattle industry
Okay,
specifically?
yeah, there are two reasons, well, three reasons, I guess. So, the adults are very small. The nymphs are about the size of a pinhead of like a stick pin, or like what you would use for like sewing or crafty type stuff. I mean, the females are maybe 2, 3 times bigger than that. So they're very small in comparison to some of these other ticks that we've talked about so far. But the reason they're most problematic is they reproduce through a phenomenon known as parthenogenesis, which means that they are able to reproduce asexually, so without the presence of a male. So that female is able to lay eggs that are viable and can hatch without, her mating. And so we can see huge increases in population numbers quite rapidly because of that, because we don't have to have this system where the males and females have to locate each other. And she's just going to be able to reproduce after taking that blood meal and getting that protein she needs to produce the eggs.
I'm glad not a lot of other things can do that. That seems
Yeah.
a little scary. So why is it so impactful? Why are we so worried about it in the livestock industry?
Yeah, that's kind of the third, point of, as to why they're problematic, and that's their vector potential for a particular strain of Tularemia, which is a pathogen and disease in cattle. So Tularemia orientalis is a pathogen that we need to be concerned about, particularly the Akita strain, which is highly pathogenic to cattle. But no need to sound the alarms yet, right? We don't have the tick in Oklahoma, and we don't have the Akita strain of Tularemia orientalis in Oklahoma. So, it's something we need to be on the lookout for, definitely, because we've got the pest here, or at least knocking on the door over there, right? Kind of the Arkansas-Missouri border. So the pest will be here, and so we just need to make sure that we're monitoring, their populations and testing them to make sure that we don't have, some sort of an uptick in this Tularemia within cattle herds.
So, several different species to be concerned about, several reasons, many reasons to think about control this upcoming spring and summer. As we round this out, what are, in your opinion, Dr. Kamik, what are the best ways to control ticks on cattle?
Yeah, that's a hard one, right? I mean, I think if we knew that, we wouldn't have any of these problems. And so I think, you know, unfortunately, they're not going to go away anytime soon, right? They're feeding on a lot of different animals within the environment, and they're changing hosts from these different life stages, which can make it difficult to treat for them and to, you know, try to control them. So we have to kind of think about controlling them in kind of a very a more broad approach. You know, we talked about Gulf Coast ticks being transported by feral hogs through the environment. So you want to make sure that you're managing feral swine or feral hogs if you've got a problem with them, because that can limit the spread of these ticks. We know that Eastern Red Cedar movement across the state is one of the things that's contributing to the westward spread of a lot of these species. So cedar management is going to be something that you could implement to help limit that potential spread in these areas where the ticks can kind of hang out. In terms of what we can do for our cattle, you want to make sure that we're putting ear tags in, because the ear tags that we're using for fly control are also going to help with Gulf Coast ticks in the ears. If you're using a dewormer for your animals, those compounds are also providing a little bit of control against ticks if they are blood feeding on the animals. And then we want to think about from an environmental perspective, the kind of the areas where ticks are typically going to be hanging out. So, you know, more wooded, more humid areas. So you want to limit your animals' access to just, you know, kind of walking around the woods or areas that have a lot of brush. If you have tall grass that's not being grazed for some reason, you'd want to make that make sure you keep that mowed and keep it short. That way it doesn't kind of serve as this area for the ticks to be kind of hanging out in and looking for those hosts. So we've got to take a number of different factors like that into consideration.
And you mentioned burning is actually helps with tick control. If we're doing that anyway, that could
Yeah,
be a
so
help.
if you're participating in that kind of patch burning program where you're burning a smaller portion of your pastures, maybe a third of them every year, rather than burning all of it once every 3 years, we see have huge impacts on tick populations, about an 80% reduction in tick numbers just from doing patch burning alone.
Yeah, so a shout out to Laura Goodman, Dr. Laura Goodman, and her team over at NREM, as far as the patch burn grazing, those types of things. Lots of integrative management. So we call it integrated pest management, right, Dr. Hammack? I'm not an entomologist, but I think that's a key word there, or key term. And rotation, of course, of the chemicals. If you're rotating fly control, make sure you're rotating. If ticks are a concern, work with your local veterinarian to address a lot of these things, because they can help you with that. We're partners with the veterinarians. We can help you with some information. They can help you with the treatment and control. So, Dr. Kamek, I really appreciate you taking the time today to talk to us about this. Very interesting. Even I learned again something, a couple more things about ticks today. So I appreciate it.
Yep, glad to be here.
Listeners, if you have any questions about what we've heard on the podcast, check out the show notes. If you're listening in Oklahoma, stop by your local county extension office. We have an office in all 77 counties, and we're happy to help you with any questions that you might have with tick control, but all external and internal parasite control. So we have lots of good information on that. So listeners, thanks so much for joining us, and have a great week.